The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Easter drama. Fat lady caught still having her dinner by Man City collapse. We ask why everything, including the defeat at Arsenal, the boat race, and why you didn't get the egg you really wanted, is all Balotelli's fault. Meantime, there's a great disturbance in the fourth. Newcastle unleash the Ben Arthur, while Spurs discover a little Norwich really is a dangerous thing. This Serie A, the old lady back on top, and Cassano back on the field. Ewan Murray talks up Celtic, and we round up the Championship and Big Sam talking bollocks. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Right, special pod today. First of all, we're a little bit later than usual. We kind of skipped the bank holiday. I'm not sure quite what happened there. But Sean Ingalls here.
Hello, James.
Hi there. And alongside him, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Hi, Jacob. And Michael Cotts, zonalmarking.net.
Hello, James.
Hello to you, zonalmarking.net.
Hello.
It's a very exciting time to be doing a pod, right in the middle of this Easter games splurge. This might be an unpopular view, but I think there are just too many games, actually. I find it a bit confusing. Just too many games. Michael, I know you like to watch 6-7 games a weekend. You must be just all footballed out at the moment.
Yeah, I find it difficult to differentiate into rounds, if that makes sense. I was surprised to find that teams playing on Monday had also played on Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's a very quick turnaround.
It is. I think it's too much, isn't it? It's like you're just finishing your antipasto and they come and slap a big, you know, wadge of spaghetti on your plate. Nobody wants that.
I do. I mean, I just think it's, I mean, maybe because I'm slightly older than Michael and Jacob, but growing up, that was always a thing, you know, over Easter, it'd always be, you know, either go to a game on a Saturday or on a Monday, yeah. And I think that's quite, it's quite English, and I think it's quite traditional, I quite like it.
It's a bit confusing for me, I think. What do we know now? Well, we know that the title race is over. Apparently, Arsene Wenger's explained that. He said, when the horse smells its stable, it's difficult to stop him. That's a lovely phrase. How come we've never heard that one before?
It's French.
French.
Yeah.
Yeah, but lots of other ones are moved to it. But guys, what horsey thing do you think City are smelling right now?
Probably something that's not we can say on air.
No, yeah. Indeed not. All right, well, there you go. Is the title race over? Rhetorical question, really. Jacob?
Yes, it is. 8 points. Manchester United are ahead now, which is pretty incredible given where they were in January. And City, you know, it kind of looked like City were going to run away with it. This is arguably the worst collapse in the Premier League era by a side in the title race.
Really? Because
I
of course
would say, yeah.
People would mention Newcastle probably at this point.
Yeah, but Newcastle didn't play badly. They lost, you know, they fell away. They were 12 points clear in February, I think, but they, you know, and they also had the issues with the away form like City had, but there were a lot of away games where they actually played well. Great game against Liverpool where they lost 4-3. City actually haven't really played since the turn of the year.
Of course, Keegan had the advantage of not having Balotelli in his team.
Yeah, just charging around like a madman on Sunday.
He did have a Sprilia point to produce a bet. I'll make a slightly ironic reference to the fact that it's all Balotelli's fault across every paper. Sean, sorry, you were...
No, I was going to say, I think City's relative decline almost predates the end of the year. They haven't scored more than one away goal in the league since November the 5th when they beat QPR 3-2. So that's a worrying stat, given how brilliant they were for the first 2 or 3 months. But clearly there are dressing room factions. We always knew about that. I think you can blame Balotelli, and rightly so, but you also have to look at Mancini. He was the guy that had worked with him at Inter and then brought him back for more. He knew what he was like. He knew he was a brilliant but destabilising influence, and yet he couldn't resist going
he
back.
He loves him. He loves him as a guy.
But it seems like the other players don't like him.
Right.
And I'm not sure I would like playing with him.
Right.
As well.
Or against him, given his capacity for raking studs down people's legs and into people's knees and that.
Mm.
But we should also give Manchester United credit, an enormous amount of credit. I mean, to have won, 12 of the last 13 games, it's quite an astonishing record.
Yeah. Should we give the referee some credit for their extraordinary win over QPR?
I mean, it wasn't just the referee. It was the linesman not spotting the offside, the referee giving the penalty. And also, as well, Ashley Young did dive. So the whole three elements in those short space of time was very edifying.
Coming over here diving.
Mm. It was a bit grotesque, that, wasn't it? But you're right, we should give Man United some credit, and also Arsenal some credit, because they absolutely bossed that game against Man City, did they not? You were there, Michael.
I was. I think Arsenal played really well, actually. I think they were helped by the fact City kept chopping and changing their shape. When Torreira went off, Mancini didn't quite know whether to play Pizarro up, you know, just behind Sergio Aguero or deep in midfield. Arsenal kind of just played their own game, and, you know, they really should have won by more. It could have been 3 or 4 nil. Arsenal were stereotypically Arsenal with how they contrived to miss opportunities. They hit the post, they missed an open goal. Vermaelen cleared one off the line from a corner early on. I was really impressed with Mikel Arteta, actually. I was pleased he got the winning goal. I must confess, when they signed him late in August with a couple of hours to go, I wondered whether he could step up and become a top four player. But I think he's probably been Arsenal's second best player behind Van Persie. And again, on Sunday, I thought he was excellent.
Become a top three player in a very real sense, hasn't he?
True. They couldn't really cope with the energy or the pace that Arsenal had, or the width they had out wide. You know, they kept on giving it to Sanya and Walcott on the right, didn't they? And kind of summed up the difference between the two teams. That City don't have play with any width at all. They don't have any wingers apart from Adam Johnson, who's not a Premier League style, you know, Premier League winning winger, you'd say.
Whenever Adam he comes Johnson, on, he looks terrific. He plays out wide, he gets really good crosses in, he looks dangerous, he jinks inside.
I don't think he's actually done anything against any big sides.
But is that because he never gets used, or is he just not capable of it?
Against good fullbacks, he's tended to come up short. But
is he?
If you look at virtually every single Premier League title-winning side, they've always had the best wingers. Even Blackburn with Wilcox and Ripley. And City don't have anyone like that. And that's why perhaps they're easy to squeeze away from home. I don't know.
No, that's a very decent point. And I think, not blaming him, but David Silva's drop in form has contributed immensely to City's drop in form overall. I mean, he was, for the first 2-3 months of the season, he was superb. If he kept that form up for the entire season, it probably would have been one of the best individual seasons we've seen in the Premier League. But his rate of goals and assists and just general influence has declined massively. And of course, he was injured on Sunday, which again highlighted that without him performing or being in the side, they can't really create.
But does, again, Mancini not shoulder some of the blame for that? He has an almost unlimited budget. He brought Nasri in, who can play a similar role. Didn't really play Nasri that much the start of the season, and perhaps he should have,
instead of using Silva every single game.
Yeah.
And plus, of course, it's Balotelli's fault, we mentioned. Jonathan McAteer, was Mario used as a scapegoat by Mancini fans and media just because he's a comfortable excuse?
I think he was both in a game against Arsenal, and also in the last 2 or 3 months, he has been a little bit, you know, off the rails, hasn't he? Let's be honest. So I think it's not the only reason why City are struggling, but it's one of many. Clearly, you know, you look at the reaction of the rest of the players when Balotelli does something stupid, they clearly are annoyed by him.
Yeah.
So that's not a good...
Has he played his last game for City then?
Well, he said that before with Tevez, and he came back, so I think it's too early to say.
Mm. All right, then.
With Balotelli, I think it's worth pointing out, I understand that an indisciplined player can be a big problem in the dressing room, but he's been by far City's best attacker in the last few weeks. I mean, Dzeko, Aguero, Silva have really gone off the boil. Like Jacob said, Johnson hasn't been doing it. Nasri, I think, overall has been quite disappointing this season. I mean, I'm not saying that his form cancels out his bad behaviour, but City would be in a worse position without him, I think.
They spent $27 million on Edin Dzeko, and it's kind of been obscured. His form's been obscured by the fact that he arrived in the same window as Andy Carroll and Fernando Torres. But he's really not done it at all. I think that, from what I hear, he'll be out in the summer, Dzeko.
Just Dzeko. I mean, they spent $25 million on Adebayor. They spent $18 million on Rocky Santa Cruz. I mean, that's an awful lot of darts to be thrown at the ball without really hitting many bullseyes.
Yeah, and who would have thought it as well? Rocky Santa Cruz. Anyway, benefit of hindsight, I like to call that. Arsenal, anyway, a brilliant performance from them, and they are now not only third, but they have a game in hand, which they're going to be playing Wednesday evening against Wolves. And then they play, I think I'm right in saying, they play both Wigan and Chelsea before either Spurs or Newcastle play again. So they could be, if they win those, something like 11 points clear by the time their rivals... They do look like they've got this third business locked down now.
I think they've got a decent run in as well, because their last three games are Stoke, Norwich and West Brom, who won't be fighting at that point because they're all, I think, 10th, 12th and 13th.
Although we saw Norwich bring a bit of a surprise. They didn't have a huge amount to fight for this weekend, but...
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Hey, I got one. Right, well, that's it for part one, but coming up in part two. Love and lots of it for Newcastle. Newcastle, yes, 5 straight wins. Is that right, or is it 6 now? See, I'm confused by this Easter double fixture overload thing. It's 5, isn't it? They beat Swansea, I know that much, in Swansea. Not many teams do that. And then Bolton, the Ben Arthur goal.
Yeah, it was like something, it was like watching Messi, wasn't it? A run by Messi,
yep,
through the middle. Such a brilliant turn as well. I'm not sure who it was away from, but there were a few cynical people saying, oh, he's just running a straight line and he, you know, all the challenges and defending were really bad. But come on, he's run away from an entire team and he had to beat someone and then finish it off.
Yes.
I think there should be separate categories for goal of the season.
All right.
Because you can't compare that to Crouch's goal.
Right. So you'd have you'd have like
a long range or a
best long range strike, best very long run, the length of a field.
Yeah, passing Messi-esque. Move, best header.
Right.
Yeah.
Best goal by a centre back.
Yeah.
Could do. All right.
I don't know. I think it's because often the three greatest goals of all time are considered to be Carlos Alberto's in the World Cup final.
Passing move.
Maradona's against England.
Great run.
And Van Basten's against USSR.
Ludicrous folly.
And they are incomparable.
It's like the triumvirate, isn't it?
They'd win those three categories hands down.
But right. It's like whether you prefer, you know, chocolate, vanilla or strawberry. You know, you can argue over the flavour, but as long as it tastes good.
Well, there's no argument there, surely. It's chocolate, isn't it? I'm nothing against vanilla or strawberry. Vanilla? Are you serious?
I think a really good vanilla ice cream can...
Should we move on? But back to Newcastle then, because they were supposed to fade away, etc., etc. at this point. But instead, we've just seen this incredible blossoming of talent. Not only him, but Papiss Dembélé. 10 goals in 9 now. And second of the two against Swansea, if you can remember that far back to Friday afternoon. Ooh.
People say it's hard to find bargains in the January transfer window.
Right.
But Cissé was perfectly one of them. But it wasn't that much of a shock that he's doing well. I mean, he did finish second in the Bundesliga scoring charts last season behind Mario Gomez.
That's true.
He's 26 years old. You know, he went for just over 10 million. And that's, you know, it's a great signing.
Dzeko did well in Germany, didn't he?
It's interesting, since he's come in, Demba Ba has stopped scoring.
Yeah.
So he's scored 1 in 10 since, and that's partly since come back from the Africa Cup of Nations. But as I was posing the question on Twitter, and a lot of Newcastle fans were saying that he's been, since Cissé's come in, Ba's been moved out to the left. And
moved out to the left.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people were saying, isn't it great the way that Ba has moved out to the left and he's not grumbling the way some other big-name forwards have when they've been asked to play in a different role? But I did notice on Friday when he went off, he had a very dark look on his face.
I don't think he enjoys it. I mean, he wasn't tracking Rangel back at all, which was why they took him off.
Yeah.
But I think the credit should go to Pardew for breaking the don't change your winning team thing. It would have been easy to just play two up front with Ba and Cissé, but he's been brave enough to change things. And with Ben Arthur on the right as well, I think they're playing brilliantly. Kabaye had a very good game on Friday as well.
All right. Does Ba prefer playing as a lone striker? I'm just wondering if the problem is Barcelona. That's rubbish. I can't believe you've been... Anyway, we'll move on. Right, sorry, your perfectly valid point, which in no way was piloted by me towards getting that. Good, right, okay. A guy says, well done, Newcastle, but how many of this squad will still be there next season even if they do make the Champions League? Fair question, eh, Mike Ashley? Not averse to selling players?
That's true, but also not averse to bringing in very good ones. I mean, last summer we wondered how they'd cope without Barton and Enrique, Kevin Nolan... Andy Carroll left in January, but they keep on buying new players.
They certainly do.
It's fascinating to see whether they can finish in the top four. I mean, looking at their running, they've got Stoke at home, then Wigan away, so you'd fancy them. But then they're away at Chelsea, home against Manchester City, and away at Everton. Now, actually, that could come to the advantage. If Everton were to win the FA Cup, they might have other things on their mind. Man City might have nothing to play for there. So actually, it's not impossible.
Right.
Even though I think Spurs are favourites.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they're just ahead on goal difference at the moment, but this Spurs revival that everyone was hailing last week seems to have already evaporated.
Well, I don't know why people were. I mean, they've only got 6 points from 24 now. I mean, clearly, ever since Redknapp was linked with the job and with the legal England job, rather, and with the legal problems that was around him, he got over those. He struggled, and Spurs have struggled.
Well, they had the draw with Sunderland, and then beaten at home by Norwich,
who played really, really well.
Who played really, really well?
Yeah, and it was really, really good winning goal by Elliot Bennett. Norwich now level with Liverpool, going, you know, Liverpool play tonight and everything, but what a job Lambert's done. They could have they could have won it by more with Norwich as well. I know that Ruddy had to make a few saves, but the Spurs goal, it shouldn't have happened, because it Holt was clearly brought down by King in the area just before, and they went up the other end and scored.
Yeah.
Lambert was furious about that, but they just got on with it as well. They didn't, some teams might have grumbled and fell away after that, especially with Spurs equalising.
Some teams like Liverpool, perhaps.
Yeah.
The Ruddy save, that was as extraordinary almost as a Hatem Ben Arfa length of the pitch run and goal. No?
Possibly get into the England squad for the Euros.
Do you think?
Possibly, yeah. There aren't many great English goalkeepers, are there?
All right. Norwich players in England squad, shocker.
Grant Holt maybe as well.
You think?
A top English goal scorer behind Rooney.
Hmm.
He's a good player as well. I mean, people think he's just very physical, but I think of all those players in that kind of category, like Andy Carroll, Peter Crouch, I think he makes the best runs. His runs are excellent, you know, always peeling away from the ball, always getting into positions at the far post. I think he's a very good player.
Mm. What about also the big conversational card that was played whenever Spurs came up? Was, yeah, they're not the same without Aaron Lennon. You know, the width he gives them, the threat, etc. He played against Norwich and still they got beaten at home.
Yeah, they were really poor. I mean, you've got to give Norwich lots of credit as well, but Spurs have been, you know, terrible for the last couple of months. I mean, the reason why I think they should still finish fourth.
But hang on, you say that. Lots of people have been saying, I mean, apart from the fact they had those two big wins against Newcastle and the other one, which momentarily escaped my mind. But in a lot of the other games, people were saying, oh, yeah, they were unlucky because they did play well against Man United and didn't get the result.
I didn't think they played that well against Manchester. I think that's one of the big myths of the season. They had a good 20-25 minutes. I can't remember lots of great saves in them. You know, I think they had some possession, but once they went 1-0 going down, they withered like a spring daffodil.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the very metaphor I would have used as well. Is this just another example of the media brown nosing Harry Redknapp? Then they're giving him an easy ride, do you think? Hey, I think you know what I'm saying. Chelsea, in the meantime, refereeing irony. Half expected to see Roberto Martinez chasing the referee in flip flops across Stamford Bridge.
You joke, though, but that could, you know, lead to Wigan going down. I mean, I often bang the drum for video evidence, but, you know, we could argue that, and I'm going to do it again, but you could argue exactly how you go around it. But at the very least, if you did it for goals and penalties and stoppages in play, you would have, that, you know, neither of Chelsea's goals would have stood, and Wigan would have got a deserved point at Stamford Bridge.
Plus their penalty at Fulham. Chelsea's fun.
Absolutely. It was, exactly.
I can't remember what game it was recently, but Sky analysed it and they said that the amount of time it took for a referee to shoo away all the players who were protesting over the... I think it was the QPR when they didn't get the goal against Bolton. For the time it took them to for the referee to say, no, it's not a goal, Sky had already ascertained that it was a goal.
Mm.
Well in advance.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Anyway, Chelsea are falling behind a little bit in the race for top four football. Are they going to make up that gap, do you think? How many points is it? You've got the...
2 points behind.
Is it just two? Yeah. Two behind Newcastle?
I think it's...
Spurs, yeah.
They've got such a tough run in, though, because not only are they've got the FA Cup this Saturday, but they're playing away at Arsenal, and that's sandwiched in between the games against Barcelona. So I think they've got a away trip to Liverpool as well. That's perhaps not the tough venue it was. You know, they also got to play Newcastle, so you know, I think Chelsea will do well to finish top four.
All right, Alan Fogon's Belly says, in the light of the diabolical decisions at the Chelsea and Man U games on the weekend, can Tuesday's pod nail the myth the bad decisions even themselves out? They don't. I don't know who's still touting that myth, apart from one or two managers, but I don't think anyone's under any illusion that in any league, anywhere in the world, these bad decisions even start.
Well,
out.
No, I mean, but I think that generally the decisions, you know,
they're always favour the big clubs.
They favour the big clubs, and I think unfortunately with the sending off rules as they are now, you know, QPR are penalised twice, you know, for the Derry foul that wasn't, and that's also unfair.
Mm. Indeed, they are rotten business. Now let's have a post to cheer us up. Matt Geraghty says, I know you rarely talk about Everton, but can any of the pod explain why they go supersonic at this time of the year? Well, we could, but we're not going to, Matt, because I think we're going to have a bit of Everton love on Thursday in our Football Weekly Extra, in which we'll be looking forward, of course, to their FA Cup semi-final with Liverpool, whose misery continued in recent days. Of course, a draw at home to Aston Villa.
Well, they've only won two out of their last 13 now.
Yeah.
I mean... But the fact is, they could easily finish the bottom half of the table, and that'd be the first time since they were relegated in 1954, and that's painful.
Well, they're closer to the bottom three than they are to the top four, aren't they?
Yeah.
I thought it was actually quite a big result in a strange way for Liverpool. Not that it's a good result, but losing at home to Aston Villa would have been an absolute disaster. It would have meant they'd lost more games than they'd won this season. Oof. And so just by not losing, I think that they can almost consider that a good result.
They were actually...
You're saying that next year's their year?
Potentially.
Yeah. They were actually better than they have been in recent games against Villa. They're unlucky not to win.
Probably. Unlucky? If Cout had not been unlucky enough to completely miss that chance from about an inch out, then
the goal almost went over with Suarez's header, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, the other thing to mention, of course, is the battle at the bottom. But to be fair, all the bottom five lost at the weekend, which is a bit of a stunner. Should, in the course of that, give a bit of love to Fulham, an extraordinary deuce, Clint Dempsey. Tread on this, or indeed don't tread on this. He's now up to, what, 22 goals? 16 in the Premier League? More than any Fulham player's ever scored in the Premier League, Sean.
Absolutely, and he scored again last night.
No, he didn't. Didn't he? It was an own goal. It was clearly an own goal. It was going wide, and it hit Gary Cahill's heart.
He scored last night until...
Now everybody's saying, every time you mention Clint Dempsey, and where's he going to be next season? As of about a week ago, it's all been, where's he going to be next season?
Yeah, he's been linked with Arsenal, Spurs and Man United yesterday.
Man United, yeah.
About 10 million because he's not signed a new contract yet.
Is he a top four player?
I'm not sure. I think he's a good player.
Really?
I'm a little bit unconvinced he's as good as his 16 goals this season make him out to be, but he can play a variety of positions.
He scores some delicious goals though, doesn't he?
He does.
He's also one of those players that when the chips are down, you'd want him on your side because he is a battler. He never stops fighting.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think Fulham have been pretty good over the last couple of months. They've been playing a very attacking side with Dembele, who's essentially an attacker in kind of a central midfield zone, which I didn't think would remotely work. But with Diarra holding, it seems to all be coming together quite nicely.
Dembele was superb last night. Ran the show. A couple of really good youngsters coming through. Karen Fry and someone else whose name I can't pronounce.
There were a lot of new names out last night, actually. All sorts of names. I mean, hello.
Well, Fry's only 18. Yeah. Signed from Grasshoppers, I think, a few years ago. And only played, nine games for them. I mean, he was superb. You know, really, really went on Ivanovic, particularly in the first half. And bodes well for the future.
Mm. Fulham slightly unlucky to only take a point from that game, would you say?
I think they had the better of it, definitely.
All right. That's enough Premier League for now, but Lord knows there's more on the way with games tonight and, of course, a big round of fixtures on Wednesday. We'll be looking back at those in Thursday's Football Weekly Extra. Right now, I feel a Serie A segment coming on. Hands up, who saw some Serie A this weekend? Sean Ingle.
I only saw the Sunday night, a bit of Sunday night, but to be honest, I was flicking more to the...
to that Real Madrid
Valencia.
What? Why? What was so special about that game then?
It was just full of incident. I couldn't believe it finished 0-0. Valencia really went for it, even though they didn't play Soldado till towards the end.
Uh-huh.
And it was just really great. It was one of the best 0-0s I've seen for ages.
Right. Interesting. How many points is it now between Real Madrid and Barcelona?
It's 4 points. It was 10. And Barcelona play tonight. So by the time it's the Madrid derby tomorrow night, it'll probably be 1 point.
It could be 1 point. Yeah. And then they play, of course, you've got the Clásico coming up
as
well.
Saturday week. So on the basis that Barcelona are going to win that game because they always beat them, they will win that game. Madrid, they can't drop another point.
Wow.
And they are bottling it.
There's an interesting thing with that game in that it's between the two Champions League semi-final legs. And because you switch around, you play Tuesday and then Wednesday, or Wednesday and then Tuesday. Barcelona have both a day less to prepare and a day less afterwards to prepare for their second leg, which is quite unfortunate.
They had exactly the same in 2009.
Oh, really?
Not sure if it was the same preparation time, but it was they played Chelsea in the semi-final in 2009. In between was Madrid, the 6-2.
I know Jimbo's just desperate for his Serie A moment, but one final thing. I would say, though, that to call Real Madrid bottling is a bit harsh, given they've won 25 out of 31 games and they've only lost two all season. But anyway, Serie A, Jimbo.
No, it's all right. Let's move on. The moment's passed, Sean.
But it was exciting, wasn't it?
It was exciting, yeah.
We're talking about bottling. What about Milan?
But they're not bottling it.
They're not. They're wobbling.
They're having a bit of a wobble. They are scricchiolando, as the Gazzetta was saying on Sunday, or at least Allegri is. Extraordinary. Milan were, what, 2 points? Two points clear going into the weekend. And but top of the table and the champions and all that. And they were hosting Fiorentina, who haven't won a game for ages now. They had the worst away record. They've been only dropping
one,
down.
They've only won one out of 11 17, or something, I think,
17,
away.
Yeah. Oh, it was loads. Anyway, and Fiorentina, who've got one of the worst strikers anywhere in European football, a Maori, a player who was owned by Juventus. They paid almost £20 million for him on the back of one good season at Palermo. And he went an entire year without scoring for them. And now, he hadn't, coming into this weekend, he hadn't scored since April 2011. So again, we're on that year business. And lo and behold, he scores against the winner for Fiorentina. Extraordinary stuff there. And everyone's saying, yeah, that's the first time he scored a big goal for Juve. Because, of course, what it meant was that Milan losing at home to Fiorentina meant that Juve, with a victory in their match, which was away at Palermo, would actually go top. And lo and behold, they got it. And 2-0, Quagliarella, once again. Love Quagliarella. He was on the score sheet, and they are now 1 point clear on the top of the table, still unbeaten. And as I say, Sunday morning's papers had all sorts of headlines, not just the Gazzetta, Corriere dello Sport as well, about how Allegri, the Milan manager, how his position's now at risk. He's wobbling, they say. It's crazy, isn't it? He won the title last year. He's 1 point off the top of the table. And they're saying that he's at risk.
Is there anyone that's been touted for as his replacement?
No, not really. I think the thing is that when Milan held Barcelona to a 0-0 draw, Berlusconi came out and said all sorts of acid things about Milan's performance. And it was kind of felt that for him to attack Allegri at that point, and he did make it specifically about Allegri's tactics, showed that, you know, the relationship had taken a particularly sour note. And therefore, were Allegri to lose out on the title this time with what is regarded as a better squad, although you could, you know, argue that point, would be a fatal thing for his Rossoneri career. Extraordinary. The positive thing, though, for Milan is the fact that Antonio Cassano, extraordinary stuff, not only was declared fit last week, but he also came on the field and didn't play badly. He should have won a penalty. The ref didn't give it. Milan had taken the lead with a very dodgy penalty, but then a foul on Cassano wasn't given. And it's extraordinary. He missed 28 games. Basically, I don't know if you remember, flying back from the game against Roma, he blacked out. And they took him into hospital, and they said, you've had a stroke, and one of the valves of your heart isn't working properly, and they had to insert this little mini umbrella thing. And for me, the notion that he can come back and play football after that is a hard one to take. But they declared him fit last week, and they have extremely stringent medical tests in Italy. And lo and behold, there he was back out on the field a couple of months on. Extraordinary. Anyway, Milan are playing tonight at Chievo, while Juve tomorrow are playing Lazio, who are involved in a battle for third. And that's a big game. Lazio, did you see Mauri's goal?
Yes.
Oh,
I was disappointed in Napoli, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've really tailed off. Since getting beat by Chelsea, they haven't been able to get a decent performance out of the team. And it does look like their chances of finishing in the top three, Champions League football, are really slipping. Lazio now on 54 points. Then Udinese just put, 3 points behind them. Then Napoli a further 3 points behind. So they're 6 points off the top three. Roma also dropping out of the picture. They got beaten by Lecce. Lecce took a 4-0 lead. Have you heard of this fellow Luis Muriel? I obviously haven't been paying attention because I didn't know much about him. He's a Colombian fellow, owned by Udinese, and he scored two. The second of which is an absolute peach. It's another of these he doesn't run up the middle of the pitch. He runs along the wing and then lovely little finish. So, Lecce battling to get out of the bottom three. They beat Roma. And again, that raises questions once more about Roma's manager, Luis Enrique. And the club are talking as well about how they've overvalued some of their players and that. But Mauri's goal, if you haven't seen it, seek it out. A glorious, glorious volley. Ver Cliven says, AC Jimble, will this be the first year since 2003 that Zlatan doesn't finish at the top of the league table? End of an era. That's true, isn't it? That's what, 9 seasons, and every year he's been in the team that won the title wherever he's played. And, well, they're only 1 point behind, but have to say, looks like coming to an end. The other run, Zlatan run, of course, is the one that the Spanish papers were busy doing cartoons about last week, which is the fact that any team that wins the Champions League and then hires Zlatan Ibrahimovic never wins the Champions League again. Or if you've got Zlatan, you don't win, and then you get rid of him and you do. Yeah.
And the other one, of course, it's statistical runs. Juve are still unbeaten.
If
they go through the whole season unbeaten, when was the last time that happened?
Milan in 91-92. Yeah. And, of course, there is also the precedent of Perugia, back in the 70s, who went the whole season unbeaten but finished second to, I think, Milan, led by Renato, the much-missed Renato Curi, who the following season dropped dead of a heart attack on the pitch at what then later became the Renato Curi Stadium.
I think Fiorentina once won the league.
Ooh.
Going unbeaten, but then lost on the final day once the league had already been secured.
Okay.
In about 1962, possibly.
All right, Mike, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue with you.
I think a date's wrong, but right. It just struck me as odd.
Well, they kind of did it and then just kind of went, I could lose.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah. I remember thinking of that when Arsenal went unbeaten.
Yeah.
And then on the final day of the season, they were 1-0 down at home to Leicester.
Yeah. Right.
And they won. But they turned it around, yeah.
Right. Interesting. Good. That brings to an end part two. In part three, we're going to have a special treat with Ewan Murray telling us all about Celtic's title winning, how to pronounce the name of the man who could become Rangers' boss, and other stuff too, and we'll be looking into the Championship. Right, part three starts with a bit of a treat for us here because we have Ewan Murray. Ewan, thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you?
I'm very well, actually. You look well, although I know you haven't slept because you've been on a transatlantic flight from the Masters, the golf.
You're telling me I look better when I haven't slept.
Well, I don't see you normally.
Well, it's normally down a phone line, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. How was the golf?
Terrific. Yeah, it all passed too quickly. And it was... I shouldn't say it was a welcome break from Scottish football because I'm going to sit here and talk about it. But
Scottish football,
It was a welcome
was it difficult
bit of variety.
Dealing with more than two contenders at one time, you know, the fact that there were lots of competitors. And
well, that's stereotypical.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You're not aware of Motherwell's fantastic season.
Well, actually, I am. And I wanted to ask you about that because, of course, Rangers' financial misery means that whatever happens to them in second place.
Yep.
They won't be going into Europe. So the race for third means possibly Champions League football. But before we get onto that, Celtic, title winners.
Yes. Deal with the champions first.
Yeah. 6-0 win.
Yeah, I mean, Celtic, James, have, over the last few weeks, have stuttered. I think subconsciously there's been the V's off, I think, and they haven't played very well over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Lost the Old Firm game, obviously, but went to Kilmarnock on Saturday, needed a point to win the league. 1-6-0, couldn't be more convincing than that. And, you know, won it in the style of champions, which obviously delighted their manager, Neil Lennon.
Although there are some people who are still unconvinced, despite that convincing win.
Yeah, well, this is the environment of Scotland. Because Rangers got a points deduction, people say, oh, well, Celtic's title is tainted, and which to me is utter nonsense. They were going to win the league anyway, regardless of whether Rangers had got the 10 points knocked off. They've been the best team in the country this season. I think even Rangers fans, if they look at it, dispassionately, well, that may be impossible, but certainly some of them would agree Celtic have had the best team and the best players generally in Scotland this season and deserve to win the league.
Mm. All right. Well, so tell us about the teams. Is what, four teams battling for third place?
Yeah. I mean, we have the top six, bottom six split in the SPL, which, and going into that, legitimately, Hearts, Dundee United, St Johnstone, and Motherwell could all finish third, which would have a, you know, I was going to say a boost for the European chances, but the problem is they go into these qualifying stages and you know, get bundled out, as the last few seasons have shown. But in theory, there's an extra bit of excitement because Rangers' European place can be picked up by someone else. Motherwell are due tremendous credit. They've got a wage bill of about £1.9 million. Rangers have lost 10 points, but even for Motherwell, I would suggest to be within 10 points of Rangers, as they were for so long, is a terrific achievement. Same goes for St Johnstone, and it, you know, that people criticise the top six, bottom six element in the SPL, but this season all these teams are going to play off against each other for something that's meaningful in terms of European places, so
yeah.
That at least will keep the season going for the last few weeks.
Is that 1.9 million a year?
Yeah.
How many players do they have?
Oh, no, you're asking, not very many.
Right.
But I'm just pointing, I mean...
No, it's very low,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's Guardian-esque, I would say. Yeah. All right, so that should be a terrific run-in, then.
Yeah.
What about Rangers? What's the story there? I do notice that this Singaporese businessman, his name?
Bill is his name.
Bill, and his second name is just two letters, NG.
Yeah, that...
How do you pronounce that, Jimbo?
Well, I'm going with Ng. That's got to be right, isn't it? Ng. This is no disrespect to you, Mr. Ng, if you're listening. I just genuinely don't know how to pronounce a name that's NG. It's quite unusual, that, isn't it? Can you think of any other names that are just consonants, Jake?
No.
Maybe somebody texted this in.
Mr. T?
Mr. T. Good answer. Yeah. That's even fewer letters, I think, isn't it?
One less.
Just one.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
That's all right. No, in short, there are still people who are adamant Rangers will be liquidated, going into liquidation. That follows, doesn't it? Liquidated means going into liquidation.
Well, I think liquidated is a bit more serious than that, isn't it? Isn't that when, you know, wet jobs and that? Yeah. Anyway, but anyway, sorry, into liquidation.
And the administrators at Rangers have made veiled threats to that end, but the flip side is people say that it is just that. It's just a scare tactic to get the kind of three serious parties looking at the club to hurry up and to put more money into the pot and to pull Rangers out of administration. And the quicker, from the club's point of view, the quicker that can be resolved, they can plan for next season, they can look forward. I mean, they're going to be wounded for quite a while, Rangers, it seems inevitable. But it's a question of how long that period is, and obviously it's determined by how quickly they can exit administration or go into liquidation or whatever's going to happen.
Right.
And listen, regardless of what people say, and as I say, some people are utterly adamant about what's going to happen. We still, you know, as we sit here now, we still don't know how this is going to play out.
Okay. Mr. Ng, in the meantime, says he was a boyhood fan of Rangers.
Yeah. I mean, listen, James, people ask, you know, why would anyone get involved in Scottish football? Why would anyone get involved in Rangers? And, you know, the most legitimate point is someone has some affiliation to the club. I would still think, you know, that the Blue Knights Consortium, which is made up of Paul Murray, a former Rangers director, and that's going to be a kind of supporter, heavy supporter involvement in that. That has seemed the most, that has been the most transparent bid to take over the club, and that is perfectly obvious. There's a connection. Rangers supporters, they want the club in safe hands. So no one is going to go into Rangers to make masses of money. Scottish football's commercial spectrum isn't big enough. But someone with an affiliation, a connection to Rangers, you know, is more logical from that point of view.
Ewan, that's terrific. You're about to fly back to, quite literally, Glasgow.
Yes.
Get your finger back on the pulse of the SPL. But many, many thanks for stopping by today.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Well, it was ours. Real treat. Thank you. Wow. How about that? Bill NG. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, that nominative determinism business with Arsene at Arsenal and Mancini at Mancini. People whose surnames can comprise part of the club to which they appertain. And NG would certainly fit that bill at Rangers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's decent.
It fits. Yeah. It's destiny. All right, let's move on to the championship then. Jacob, you just got back from an exciting trip to Barnsley, is that
no,
right?
No, I got back on Friday. Not,
all right.
Yeah.
All right, you're still getting over it though, I imagine, you're not?
Yeah, because I had a really bad experience, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
What happened?
I turned up at King's Cross, St Pancras, to get
bad
my train.
Yep.
Yep. With no money in my wallet.
Ooh.
And then my bank card wouldn't work.
Oh.
So I had to go up to Barnsley with, well, £2. £2, I went up to Barnsley with.
£2 in your pocket?
Yep.
Yeah, wow. So you bought a three-piece suit, a fish dinner, and you still had change for the ride home.
Yeah, luckily I got some money off some mates.
But, all right.
Yeah.
Crikey. I bet you've been freelancing for people who haven't paid you.
Yeah.
That is not for inclusion. Yeah. Anyway, right.
It was an enjoyable day out. They won 4-0.
Who did?
West Ham.
West Ham!
And then followed it up with another home draw against Birmingham yesterday.
Against Birmingham. They were only just, though, 3-3 last-minute stuff, wasn't it?
They were 3-1 down at half-time.
Right.
By the way, I was on the train back with the West Ham team.
All right.
Yeah. They're in a carriage.
Yes.
And the police were protecting them. They wouldn't let anyone get in. And it meant that you couldn't get to the buffet car or one of the toilets. That was really well thought out. So they were in the middle of the train.
All right, but you were on the same train. You
I actually got on the escalator when I was back in London, and I was next to Ricardo Vazte and Winston Reid.
Really?
Didn't want to know, to be honest.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
They weren't interested in the chance of the fans.
Well, of course, relations between West Ham and the fans have become a little bit brittle, shall we say. Sam Allardyce crossing a line for many. By calling out the fans and their criticism and describing it as bollocks. I have to listen to bollocks like this all the time from people who don't know
and
bollocks.
And called them deluded as well.
Deluded.
After the win against, so they were 3-0 up at half time against Barnsley, and there's still chance, there was, you know, chance of we're all deluded and we talk bollocks. yeah.
Is the split, is it healable, do you think? Can time heal?
It's weird because I've seen much more poisonous atmospheres at Upton Park. Yesterday they were 3-1 down at half time, and in the second half the crowd really got behind them. And there's not really been any chance for Allardyce to be sacked or anything. The problem for him is he was already unpopular at West Ham because he doesn't play the West Ham way, or he's perceived not to. He'll tell you that he plays brilliant football. But also, you know, it stems from the 2003 season when his Bolton side stayed up instead of West Ham. And Bolton didn't like West Ham because they were seen as, you know, they were seen as half England team in that side, who obviously left. He would say it's confidence. It comes across as arrogance. And his tactics at home, especially, are very, very strange. I think they've dropped, I'm not sure how many it is, but probably it must be about 25 points at home, and that includes draws at home to Bristol City, Doncaster, Watford. 28 points, and you're not going to go up like that, even though they have broken the record for away wins.
Oh,
this season, only for West Ham, not in the Championship itself. But now they've conceded 7 goals in 2 home games against Birmingham and Reading, and it seemed like every time they made a mistake, it was punished. They didn't play too badly in either game, but they were not clinical enough, and Reading and Birmingham were. Reading look like they have a fairly tough run in.
Reading do?
Yeah, they're at Brighton tonight, and then they play Southampton away on Friday night, and on the last day they're at Birmingham.
That's huge, isn't it? Because Southampton and Reading currently are separated by 3 points in the automatic promotion places. Then you've got West Ham. Reading, though, have a game in hand on both Southampton above them and West Ham below them. You mentioned that it's the game against Brighton this evening, presumably.
Yeah, I suspect that Southampton have done enough now. Their run-in's not too hard the last 4 games they have. And, you know, in Ricky Lambert, he scored his 26th goal of the season. He scored 2 at Crystal Palace yesterday, 1-2-0. They should be fine now. I think they'll win the league. Right. Reading, it's a bit touch and go because those three, although they've been on an amazing run of form, I think it's 13 wins in 15 or something like that.
And some tough games in there. They were going to your place and winning, what was it, 4-2.
So
the Leeds game on Friday as well.
Yeah, that was a horrible game.
Horrible. What was happening there?
Well, it was just typical Leeds, really.
Really?
and typical Warnock side went out to kick them. It was, and the weird thing is the guy that got sent off, it wasn't even the worst tackle of the match. Danny Pugh on Cem Karacan, a leg breaker. I think he had to go off. And then they continued it yesterday. Michael Brown, that lovable character, got sent off for just sticking his studs into Derby players' private parts.
Aye.
Yeah, and got sent off.
Oof.
Yeah. So, incredibly, as he walked off, he was going, "Why did I get sent off?"
Right, Leeds very much mid-table. The 4 promotion places at the moment, the playoff places rather: West Ham, Birmingham, Blackpool, Cardiff, and Brighton. Just outside that, as are Borough. What's your thoughts, Sean? Who do you think's?
Well, Leicester have been good since the start of the year. I don't think they're out of it.
All right, okay. Yep.
Hull, I think, are dipping a little bit, but I think Leicester might just squeeze in.
All right, who do you want to see come up?
Don't really mind.
Right, obviously West Ham.
Yeah. Leicester would be... I don't think anyone would want to play Leicester in the playoffs because they've got a expensive, underachieving squad, but they, you know, in the playoffs, it can be the side that finds form at the end of the season and gets in there right at the end because they've been well off the pace for a long time and now they're starting to click.
All right, and at the bottom, meantime, it looks all over for Portsmouth and Doncaster. Coventry now 4 points away from Bristol City. Michael, you got a question.
Jacob, what do you make of the quality of the Championship? Because I don't watch a great deal of the league, but when I do, I'm often not impressed by the actual quality. But sides that have come up in recent years, West Brom, Newcastle, Swansea, Norwich, have all acquitted themselves really well.
No.
Michael's
kryptonite is called Championship football.
I don't make too much of it either. I don't think that Southampton or Reading are anything special, but even though they're in the top two. But I don't think West Ham are anything special either. I think everybody, you go to every game I go to, you know, after about 20 minutes, you'll get everybody saying, if we go up, we're going to have to spend about 30 million on this side. We're going to need a whole new team. I haven't been too impressed with any side I've seen at Upton Park this season. I mean, when Reading came, they got battered for about half an hour. And then it was 4 goals that West Ham kind of, and, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bitter or anything, but they were gifted the goals. They didn't tear them apart. and the same applied to when I saw Southampton play. I've seen, I've watched Championship football for 2 years, about 7 years ago. The sides that went up then were a bit better.
Hmm. All right, then. Well, it's certainly been a vintage crop of promoted teams this season in the Premier League, but perhaps not so much next time around. That, though, is it for today's Football Weekly. In a matter of just 2 days, we'll be back with Football Weekly Extra, putting the Easter football glut to bed once and for all, preparing for another round of fixtures, of course, on the weekend. Do join us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to Sean Ingle, Jacob Steinberg and Michael Cox of ZonalMarking.net. Although, don't go there for any championship news, because, frankly, you're not going to find anything. And also to Ewan Murray and to producer Ben. Super time for you all, I hope, in the next 2 days. We'll be back on Thursday.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.